I'm glad I was able to calm her down, to sound confident doing so, because I'm actually pretty freaked out. Sunlight is starting to peek through the curtains, and outside that window is a beautiful city full of innocent people that I just saw ravaged. That dream seemed so real. I can't just shake it off. What if we aren't able to stop what's coming?
Chapter 20. Later that morning, I gather everyone in the living room for what I hope will be a strategy session. Some important things got brought up at dinner last night, and it's time we planned our next move. However, the first order of business for our tired group, many of whom were woken up by screaming a few hours ago, is this issue of Ella's nightmares. Malcolm strokes his beard thoughtfully.
Let's assume that these nightmares are being caused by Cetricus Ra. I find it extremely troubling that he's able to transmit them somehow, presumably through some form of Mogadorian telepathy, without knowing our exact location. In fact, you said you saw Chicago burning, correct?
Ella nods, not looking eager to revisit her latest nightmare. Bernie Kosar, curled up at her feet, nuzzles against her.
It was Chicago after a major battle, Marina clarifies. Is he taunting us? Six asks. Or is it like some kind of prophecy?
I thought we were done with prophecies, Eight says, rolling his eyes.
Sometimes there's a little bit of truth in the nightmares, I say.
Like when we had that vision about New Mexico,
Nine chimes in.
Yeah, but other times it's like he's just trying to screw with us.
The content doesn't worry me so much as the fact that Cetricus Ra is able to transmit them at all, says Malcolm,
deep lines forming in his face as he thinks this through.
Do you think it's possible he's tracking us through the dreams?
If he could do that, wouldn't we already be fighting off Moogs?
Eight replies.
Why even bother drawing John and Nine off to New Mexico?
I nod in agreement, thinking back to the visions Nine and I shared. Even though the nightmares can be creepily specific, I don't think he knows where we are. It's more like he's trying to make us slip up.
The question, then, is how do we stop the nightmares?
Malcolm asks.
I've got a solution, Six says, and everyone looks in her direction.
She takes a considering sip from a mug of coffee.
Let's go kill Cetricus Ra.
Nine claps his hands and points at Six.
I like the way this chick thinks.
Oh, is it that easy?
Five asks, speaking up for the first time.
You make it sound like taking out the trash.
I wish it were so simple, I say. But we don't know where he is, and even if we could find him, that's not going to be an easy fight. The last time we went up against him almost killed us.
We could get him to come to us,
Nine suggests, glancing over at Five.
Maybe fire up some more crop circles.
You can't be serious, Sam says.
I noticed him shifting in his seat at the mention of Cetricus Ra.
He's not serious,
Five says, glaring in Nine's direction.
He's mocking me.
Nine shrugs and feigns a yawn.
Whatever. I really do think we should go fight something.
That's all you ever want to do,
Eight cuts in.
Yeah, it's my thing.
For the first time ever, we're together, I say, keeping my voice measured. We have the element of surprise on our side. We've got an opportunity to prepare and pick our next battle. Let's not rush into anything.
John's right, Marina says. There's still so much we don't know about ourselves, our powers, our chests.
It'd be good to know exactly what we're working with,
Eight says.
We did some training with Nine in the lecture hall the other day. It was helpful. Surprisingly so.
Nine grins.
Compliment taken, insult ignored.
Yeah, Sarah chimes in. I think I speak for all of us humans when I say a little more combat training wouldn't hurt.
Learning what our chests contain would help, too, I offer. Maybe we could figure out which items are those Phoenix stones that Malcolm was talking about.
An inventory seems to be in order,
Malcolm says. Which means we need to make finding your chest a top priority, I say, looking over at Five.
Absolutely,
Five replies, seeming about as certain as I've ever seen him.
I know exactly where to go. We can do that whenever you want.
That might make a good first mission, Eight says, especially if we could get it done under the Moog radar.
I still think we should just blow up their freaking radar, Nine grumbles.
Soon, buddy,
I reply. For now, we need to play it safe. Gather our strength. Malcolm, what about the Mogadorian guy?
Adam. Malcolm shakes his head, his features sagging. I've hooked up a tracker so we'll be alerted if his cell phone turns on. But nothing yet. I fear the worst.
Maybe he just ditched his phone, suggests Sam,
trying to cheer up his forlorn-looking dad.
We got a bit off topic here, didn't we?
Six puts in.
What about Ella's nightmares?
It's Ella, who has been listening quietly, that responds.
I'll tough them out. The next time that big freak gets into my head, I'm going to punch him in the balls.
Whoa!
All right, I say, grinning. Meeting adjourned.
Chapter 21. Later, the four of us that still have our chests gather in the workshop with Malcolm. I'm happy to help out. I'm just not sure how much use I'll be. Adelina wasn't around enough to explain what any of the stuff in my chest does. From the lecture hall comes the muffled sound of Six training marksmanship with Sam, Sarah, and Ella. I think Five is in there too, although he didn't look too thrilled about the prospect of learning to shoot. Nine stares longingly at the door to the lecture hall. Sighing dramatically, he starts rummaging through his chest.
Check this out, Nine says.
He holds up a small purple stone and then places it on the back of his hand. The stone slides into his hand. Through it. Nine turns his hand over just as the stone pops out in his palm.
Pretty cool, right?
He asks me, waggling his eyebrows.
But what is it supposed to do? Eight asks, looking up from his own chest. I don't know. Impress girls? Nine looks over at me. Did it work? I hesitate, trying not to roll my eyes too hard. Not really, but I've seen guys teleport, so I'm kind of hard to impress.
Tough crowd. What does it feel like when it passes through your hand? Malcolm asks. He holds a pen poised over a clipboard.
Kind of weird, I guess. My hand goes numb until the stone passes through.
Nine shrugs, glancing around.
You guys want to try?
Yes, actually, Malcolm says. When he puts the stone on his hand, nothing happens.
I guess it's Lorik only.
Malcolm hands a stone back to Nine. Instead of putting it back into his chest, Nine shoves the purple stone into his pocket. Maybe he's going to go out and try to impress some ladies later. John holds up a collection of brittle-looking leaves, the bundle held together by some yellow twine. He cradles them gently in his hands, unsure what to make of them. This has to be something to do with Lorien, right?
Maybe it's a reminder from Henri that you're supposed to break the lawn, Nine says, digging through his own chest again. I don't have any dumb leaves in here.
Malcolm peers at the bundle in John's hands. Gently, he runs his index finger along the edge of a leaf. I almost expect the delicate little thing to crumble. Suddenly,
The sound of a gentle breeze fills the room. It stops as soon as Malcolm puts back his finger. "You all heard that?" he asks. "Sounded like someone left a window open," 8 says, looking around at the four walls cluttered with equipment. Not a shred of daylight comes through anywhere. "It was a sound of wind on Lorien," John says, his eyes getting distant. "Somehow, I know that's what it was." "Do it again," 9 says, and I'm a little surprised by the sincerity in his voice. But then, I really want to hear the wind again, too. There was something comforting about it. John brushes his hands through the leaves, and this time, the sound is fuller. My skin prickles. It's almost as if I can feel the fresh loric air on my skin. It's beautiful. "Amazing," 8 says. "But what is it for?" 9 asks, returning to his usual bluntness. "It's a reminder," John replies, his voice low, like he's a little choked up and trying to hide it. "A reminder of what we've left behind. What we're fighting for." "Interesting," Malcolm makes a note on his clipboard. "Further study will be required." One by one, Malcolm stands over our shoulders as we empty out our chests. He writes down everything, making notes for the objects we know how to work and underlining the ones that we don't. From the dark gloves that shimmer when I touch them to the circular device that looks sort of like a compass, pretty much every item in my inheritance gets underlined. "What do you think this does?" 8 asks, holding up a curved antler that looks like it was snapped off the head of a small deer. "It's the only thing in here I don't know how to work." 5 seconds after 8 held up the antler, Bernie Kosar bolts through the workshop door with his snout in the air. He looks thrilled, his tail wagging. He jumps right on 8, pawing at him. "He wants the antler," says John, in case you couldn't tell. Shrugging, 8 lowers the antler and BK takes it in his jaws. He flops over onto his back and begins to roll back and forth. He emits a happy purring sound that definitely doesn't go with his dog form. In fact, his form begins to flicker in and out, almost as if he's having trouble controlling himself.
"He's so weird,"
9 is laughing hysterically.
"If we weren't on the run, I would totally put this on the internet."
"Whoa, whoa," John says, rubbing his temples. "Calm down, BK. Malcolm looks from BK to John.
"You can communicate with him?"
"Yeah," John answers, "telepathically. So can 9. He's pretty wound up. He says the antler is, I don't know how to put it. It's coming through in a weird language, like a totem or something. For Chimera. Well, he's our only Chimera, so he can keep it," says 8, grinning as he crouches down to rub BK's belly. "Ella came in here on a ship filled with Chimera," I say. "Do you think we could use that to attract them? Maybe they're lost and need to know where to find us." Malcolm immediately starts writing on his clipboard. "Very good thought, Marina." I smile, feeling a little swell of pride. Now if I could only figure out what the stuff in my chest does.
"If you're looking for boring nature-themed crap, I've got this," 9 says, holding up a small leather pouch.
He passes it around, and we each look inside. It's filled with rich chocolate brown soil. When Sander was explaining my inheritance, he told me it was meant for growing things, but that we wouldn't need it for a long while. 9 reties the leather strings to the top of the pouch and dismissively tosses it back in his chest. I guess he's not all that interested in things that can't kill Mogadorians. I look through my chest, brushing aside the assortment of gems that could have funded my Spanish version of Nine's penthouse if Adelina had cared, looking for anything that might have to do with restarting Lorien. "What about this?" I ask, holding up a slim vial of crystal-clear water. The glass is cool to the touch beneath my fingers.
"Drink it," suggests Nine.
Malcolm shakes his head.
"I'd advise against ingesting any of the items in your chests until we know what they do."
"You listening?" Eight elbows Nine. "Don't eat any of the rocks."
I uncork the vial. As soon as the air touches it, the liquid transforms to a shade of blue, exactly the same as the Lorelite stones. It's only a brief reaction, though, the blue quickly fading back to the clear water. I drag my finger down the side of the vial, and a trail of bright blue appears in the liquid, then fades as I lift my finger away. I notice little tendrils of blue swirling about beneath the tips of my fingers where I'm holding the vial.
"Did you see that?" I exclaim.
"It's like the liquid can feel your touch through the glass," says John.
"May I?"
asks Malcolm. I hand it over to Malcolm. When he holds the vial, the color of the liquid doesn't change.
"Hmm,"
he says, and holds the vial out to John.
"You try."
As soon as John takes the vial from Malcolm, the liquid again flashes the brilliant cobalt shade of Lorelite. We all watch as it slowly fades away, except where John is touching it. The way the liquid pulses, it's like it wants out of the vial, like it's eager to be in contact with us.
"So it detects Loric," Eight says.
"But what good is that if we're the only ones left?"
"I'm going to try something," I say, taking the vial back from John.
Carefully, I tip the vial so that just a single drop spills into the palm of my hand. The liquid turns blue, and a tickling sensation spreads across my palm. Then, the single droplet quivers and expands, gaining mass and density, until I'm holding in my hand a smooth nugget of Lorelite.
"Whoa!"
Eight says, taking the stone out of my hand and turning it over, examining it.
"Whoa, indeed,"
Malcolm bends down, gazing in amazement at the stone.
"Whatever that material is, it defies the laws of physics."
"So we can create Lorelite with that," John muses. "Nine and I both have something that looks like it could be used for farming or planting, and Eight has an object that can summon Chimera. Doesn't it seem like that's the stuff that can help us jumpstart Lorien?"
"It does indeed," says Malcolm.
I put the stopper back into the vial, not wanting to waste any more of our precious liquid Lorelite. The inventorying goes on for a little while longer with Malcolm taking really meticulous notes. We're all eager to learn as much as we can about our inheritances. Well, except for Nine. He keeps gazing towards the door of the lecture hall. He makes us promise to train with him after we're done with all the brainy stuff. In truth, I'm looking forward to another session in there myself. I feel like I've got a lot of catching up to do before I'm at the same level of combat readiness as the others. When the others leave, Eight and I linger, putting the last few items back into our chests. I put the Lorelite stone that I created in there as well, but Eight plucks it out. He squeezes it tightly in his fist and concentrates.
"What are you doing?"
He opens his eyes and sighs. "I wanted to see if I could use this to teleport to one of the other Lorelite stones. I've tried using my pendant before and that didn't work either. They must not be big enough chunks."
"What?
You wanted to take a quick jaunt to Stonehenge? Maybe Somalia?" I take back the stone and put it in my chest, locking it up.
"Things are going to be moving fast now, that's all.
I just wish we had more